All right, welcome. My name is Kinda Kiefel, and I'm here with the awesome Robert Sickles, and we are jumping into the cold open number 34. We're talking about the Snyder Cut Justice League 2021, and this will be part two, The Age of Heroes. So welcome, and thanks for joining us. Robert, initial impressions of part two, what do you got?
Oh, I've got a lot to say. This was the first chapter where I really started noticing things that I found interesting as concerns mythology, culture, the nature of comic books contemporarily, etc. But a couple observations right away is Zack Snyder loved slow motion. He loved slow motion so much. He loves slow motion as much as maybe any filmmaker in film history, with the exception maybe of John Woo.
Yes, absolutely.
John Woo's work, it's all about slow motion, but he loves it. And the other
option
is Jason Momoa looks amazing with his shirt off.
Yeah, and it's insane. And those tattoos, what makeup person had to paint him every day for
spectacular. And the movie wastes no opportunity for him to shed his shirts. Like over and over again, we see him with no shirt. There has not been this much fetishization sexually of a male superhero since the glory days of Joel Schumacher shooting Batman films in the 90s. So those were the things that really stood out to me initially, other than the mythology stuff we'll get to. How about you?
Perfect. You're so right, because why does he even wear the shirt into the bar soaking wet except to take it off later? It is sort of comically fetishizing. Can I say that I love that he drinks? That just makes me endlessly happy as like the humanness and human quality of him. But yeah, it's pretty spectacular and all tatted up, just super awesome, badass looking. But yes,
virtually nothing to do with the comic book Aquaman, you know, with this classic kind of orange and green outfit and short, fairly close crop blonde hair, etc. And it's a really welcome change. He's a way more interesting character than the traditional comic Aquaman.
Yes, I agree completely. I like that he's kind of messy and pissed off, and yeah, he's got a great presence, and he is a perfect casting for that. Can I ask you a timeline question? And this is coming from a naive place, but what I had understood was, is Amber Heard not his love interest in the Aquaman movie while his mother is still alive? And why do they seem like they don't know each other now? Is that just a different issue kind of situation? Can you explain that to me?
Well, the reason for that, Kenda's original Justice League, which we might note that neither one of us felt compelled to go back and watch in prepping for this podcast. Once was plenty enough. It was really disappointing to watch that film. But the original Justice League was in 2017, whereas Aquaman came out in 2018. So that's the timeline. This is actually a prequel
to the events. Of course. Okay. Can I say also the Diana's conservator superhero jobs was all very strange, but the mural creation, once the arrow has been shot, the fire, the warning has been sent out, man, the set piece of that mural come to life. I just hope that the designers get so many awards for that, because it was pretty cool and pretty stunning to see something that looks ancient and futuristic at the same time, which I feel like this movie is good at over and over, right? But just as a set piece, I thought it was spectacular.
Yeah. So did that remind you of the Harry Potter movies? And I forget which one. I think it was the 7 part one, where it has like that animated
sequence. The Deathly Hallows. Yes. Oh, yes. God, it's gorgeous. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Almost 300 mixed with stop motion, like a little bit Burton-y, but yes, exactly. With the sort of almost like hieroglyphs or the Grecian carvings. Like it was particularly stunning coming from an art form of drawing it, to like go back and to show the sort of parademons as like hieroglyphics almost. I just loved it. I thought it was a gorgeous piece of filmmaking.
I did too. And I love that part in the Deathly Hallows was one of my favorite parts of all those movies.
So,
but it brings to mind a question. And that is on the first day ever of college for me back in 1985, in an intro to fiction class, I had a professor stand up. And the first thing he told the class is, there are no new stories, and that all stories can come under the rubric of love, death, war.
Okay.
And I have found that to be, you know, broadly defined, but I have found that to be true. So with that in mind, one of the things that fascinates me about this film is the question of, is it derivative or is it feeding into common mythology that lasts over time? So again, we know that that scene you're talking about with that, the cave paintings basically ties in. It has some similarity to what we saw in Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. But similarly, the dark side mythology is literally the Lord of the Rings, right? Yes. Where all the people of Middle Earth unite to defeat Sauron, much the same as all the people of Earth at that time united to defeat Darkseid. And then the mother boxes must come together to form unity in the same way that the Infinity Stones need to come onto the Infinity Gauntlet, right? And then the parademons look exactly like the Chitauri. I mean, not exactly, but very similar, right? The flying kind of Thanos minions in the first Avengers movie and that we see in Endgame and et cetera, and Infinity War for that matter. And then both the parademons and the Chitauri kind of look like the flying blue monkeys in Wizard of Oz, right?
That's, and it would have been cooler had they been more of the flying monkeys, but exactly. And honestly, one thing that really snagged me to go along with that was how frustratingly similar at certain points, both Darkseid and Steppenwolf have the Thanos qualities, that big chinned ogre kind of aesthetic, except with sweeter eyes, I suppose, for Steppenwolf, because we're supposed to see a little bit of humanity or have a little pity for him in the face of the more evil dark side. But there was just a little too many similarities in that way, to which they felt derivative, although Steppenwolf's suit, so cool, so interesting, but also a little bit Transformer-ish, right? Although I liked the sort of Venus flytrap quality, almost like biology and future alien technology combined. So I saw the effort, but at the same time, there were just a lot of, especially with the parademons, as you said too, there's a lot of sort of armies of minions that they were very, very close in recalling, and it was distracting.
Doesn't the Steppenwolf character act similarly to the Herald of Thanos in Guardians of the Galaxy? I forget the name of that character, but that's very similar. And then there's also the intermediary that talks between Steppenwolf and Darkseid, which again is kind of serves, I forget the character's name, but there's like a herald for Thanos that talks between Earthlings and Thanos, etc. Like, greetings, you get to die by Thanos again today, this glorious day. So here's the question then: are these derivative? Are they repetitive? And I don't just mean the Snyder Cut. I mean like comic book movies in general or popular culture in general. Are these just the same kind of mythical stories that we tell over and over and over again? And there just seems to be similarity between them. And I'm kind of thinking it's both.
Yeah, I think it's both also. I think it's both. And when it's done well, it doesn't feel as much that way, as much of a repeat, right? And you never get tired of certain themes. The good team assembling, for instance, some of those tropes that are just going to be repeated, especially with the superhero stories. But I think it's both as well. I think that's a great point you make, and an interesting introduction to freshman literature that feels, that I know is true, but also I fight against all the time. As far they say the same about songs. There's no new songs, right? But it's like, I just want to argue that so much. And I will say, the way that the construct, the sort of envisioning of the mother boxes, is really interesting in the way that it takes the particular pieces of technology and even like the three fates as translated to living perfect machines, right? And they're sort of what would you call it, the mirroring effect or whatever it is that they do, that they're not necessarily evil. I think that's an interesting way to repeat that, if that makes a repeat mythology. How about you? Do you think it's both?
I agree. Yes. And I have ceased resisting the idea, yes, that there are same new stories, yes, that kind of feel like there aren't, but I am a firm believer that there's new ways to tell the old stories.
Yes,
and that's absolutely the point, right.
And that's what we're looking, exactly, for in the medium of film, right? Especially, I feel like,
you know, in the medium of art, broadly defined, right? Well, that's true. What we want to see. We want to see something new, even if it's not entirely new. It's just a new version of that old thing, but it's the new that's exciting, as well as the discovery of the old. Though there's something really satisfying in that as well.
Absolutely. No, exactly. You're right, because history retold in a beautiful, interesting way, or with a particular strange casting or color scheme or what have you, it's not going to be a new color, but it is going to be a new way of seeing, right? And I do think there are pieces of this that were surprising in that way, whereas I think my first viewing, it felt more repetitive, derivative, sort of retelling than this, the second breaking up version of these viewings. And I thought there were some unique qualities that I don't think I saw the first time through. I think that is a great point though, Robert, and I appreciate you. Did you feel defensive when you heard your English teacher say that? Like, do you as a filmmaker and as a creative person feel resistance to that idea at all, as far as like the new stories?
More so then than I do now. And the reason I think I was so resistant to it then is because I was so young. I was 17 years old. And
right. Yeah.
I was just, for me, all this stuff was new. Right? I was reading, yes, it and seeing it, and I didn't understand. And now the difference between 17 and 53 and thousands of books and movies and TV shows, et cetera, you just see recurrence over, yes, and over and over again. That said, the works of narrative art that I tend to gravitate towards, while they might not necessarily be new as concerns the story they're telling, the ones I tend to like are the ones that are telling it in a new way.
Beautiful. No, exactly right. I completely agree. And I almost feel like there's a line in part two, when Wonder Woman is talking, when Diana is going through the story of the mother boxes and the sort of Age of Heroes idea, the quote is that the boxes were made from a science so advanced, it looks like sorcery. And I would say that speaks to filmmaking and the sort of like, done so well, it looks like magic, but it is using the old ways and the advancement of effects and science and all of that great stuff. Even the sort of idea of editing in a different way, as we see it through this Snyder cut, right? And allowing it to be edited as such. I just liked that line so much, that it's like, when science is so advanced, it looks like the oldest magic, right?
So I love that as well. And if I was to take a more cynical reading of that, as opposed to your really sensitive and eloquent understanding of it, there is a kind of shorthand storytelling in these movies that is, this is so complex, you can't understand it, and you don't,
yes,
you don't need to understand.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yes. That, yeah, can read in a really kind of dull way too. Right. Like it is, you're right, it is a shorthand and it can be lazy. right. But I like the idea of when that's done right. Right. But not saying that this is perfect by any means, but, I feel like it was trying to say that. so
yeah. Briefly before we end this, like, I found this to be an incredibly satisfying chapter. And I also, one of the things I really like about this that I thought was ingenious is cutting it up into parts was great. If you're going to make a 4-hour film and put it on TV, which is essentially what they did, right? It's a subscription service, but people are still watching it on TV. It is palatable. You can watch it in chunks. Other than one point in time, which we'll talk about later, I don't have an issue with where the chapter breaks are. They make sense. They're self-contained. You can understand the thing. It's palatable. You can put it in your pocket and then return to it going forward. So I also think that was a really smart choice for this particular medium, which I don't know what is it. Movie vision?
Yes, exactly. That's well said. Yeah.
What you call it.
Yes. What would you call it? Exactly. That's good. I like that. No, I think so as well. And I think it was even more satisfying seeing the way that chapter two ends with the hiding of the boxes. It made me laugh because, you know, how beautiful and intricate those scenes are, the different styles in which underwater people and the Amazons do their beautiful sort of encasing. And my husband, Jeremy, he's like, of course the humans just dig a hole. It just made me laugh. It was like, I like that the humans keep being so human in this, and even to the point of in the midst of a magic box. So.
Well, and it was repeated later, right? When Cyber like literally digs a hole.
That's exactly right.
Like, they're probably going to find that.
Yes, it's not that deep. This is how a bad crime is covered up. So, that was kind of perfect, right? But no, well done. And I appreciate your excellent observations, Robert. That's great. Awesome. Well, do you need to add, would you like to add anything else? Or are you good?
No,
okay. Well, I think that's a beautiful point to end. I hope you all look forward to chapter three, part three next time. I know I do. For Robert Sickles, this is Kinda Kiefel, and this has been the Cold Open Mini number 34. Thank you for joining us.